This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening for Wednesday, February 13th, 2013. My name is Dr. Doug Kelly. I'm here, of course, with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello, Doug, and happy birthday.
Thank you very
much. Happy birthday.
It is a special
day. Dr. Doug Kelly. That's so exciting.
You know, just
I love
a little trivia here. I was born on Friday the 13th.
Really?
And I took all the good luck right out of that day, and the rest is history.
Well, we're all glad to be here for another show, and happy that you decided to join us tonight, Doug, even though it's your birthday. Special day.
Well, I wouldn't. Where else would I be, you know? Anyway, let's get on with this stuff. We welcome everybody to the live show tonight, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Glad you could join us. Metaphysical Universe is a weekly service and educational program of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. And in addition to this weekly program, we, of course, have Metaphysics Institute, more officially known as the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. It's a metaphysics school offering degrees in metaphysics where you can specialize in different areas such as counseling, coaching, hypnosis, paranormal science, holistic healing, and others. For more information on the school, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Before we get into our topic tonight, we'd like to do our usual profession of beliefs. The spiritual philosophy of MCHS Church is based on 9 principles of belief. These principles of belief are, number one, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Number two, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. Number three, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. Number four, we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Number five, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. Number six, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both the physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Number seven, we believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these three synergistically create the goal of self-completeness. Number eight, we believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Number nine, we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence. For more information on these 9 principles of belief, please visit mchschurch.org. So tonight we're going to be talking somewhat around number 3, which was that we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems, and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. Basically, the topic tonight is how hard can it be solving our own problems. We're going to focus not just on individual problems, but also as a species. And these are kind of some conceptual concepts. Is that redundant or what? Some conceptual points for problem solving. And, we'll talk about the 3 universal laws of responsibility, really understanding these and applying them in your life will make your life more successful. Plus, it's a great thing to teach any children that you may have. Of course, talking about children that are still at home. So, anyway, with that...
You know, Doug, I was thinking of a little film on YouTube that you turned me on not too long ago to, with Bob Newhart's little skit where he's the psychiatrist, and the client comes in and she's got all these problems. She's referred to him, and he said he charges $5 because it'll only take 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And everything she said, he just went, stop it.
Mm-hmm.
I've used it many times, you know, too. There's a lot of problems we have that really aren't problems. I guess that's the point. You know, it's. I think that if we can just begin to determine what's a problem and what's sometimes just a figment of our own imagination, and we all do it, you know.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great point actually to start with, because a lot of times we make problems out of nothing, out of thin air, honestly. And this is just a little connected point here. Do you have the crisis mentality? A lot of people have the crisis mentality where their life essentially goes from one crisis to another crisis. They can be small crises, they can be big crises, but they essentially go from one crisis to another crisis. And it's interesting because if you grew up in any kind of an alcoholic home or something like that, that's what your life was. It was a series of crises, one to the next, to the next, to the next. When you grow up that way, you end up unconsciously creating these little crises. It could be a spat with a partner. It could be a fight at work. It could be whatever. It could be mismanagement of funds, so now you're short. It could be anything, but we end up going from one crisis to another one. And I actually lived that way for a while till I recognized it and put the curtails on that one. I mean, no living like that anymore.
I think there's a term for it. It's called crisis junkies, because it really does become an addiction. It's unless you get a rush or some kind of a fix, or unless you can fixate or focus on a particular something that
mm-hmm.
you can fix, then you don't really have to look at the bigger picture of your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and that's a great term too, crisis junkies. But a lot of people are that way. So if you find that that's what your life is made of, and I'm going to go back to what you mentioned about Bob Newhart, stop it. You know, stop living that way. That's no way to live.
I love that. I love that skit. If anybody gets a chance, just go into YouTube and, you know, click on Bob Newhart, and it actually does label the video clip, stop it. So it's fun.
Yeah, it is. And it's so apropos. We've talked about that in previous shows, too. But so let's talk about these problems. And remember that problems generally don't have any real life of their own. They only have the life that we give to them as a rule. And that doesn't mean that you can't have some legitimate problems, but it really boils down to how we view them and what kind of energy we put into them, if we take ourselves too seriously or not. So be careful, be aware of these points. When you're dealing with a problem, you got to ask, is it really a problem? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? And if the worst that can happen, is that a problem? If not, then you don't have a problem. You know, so put things in perspective, I think, is the key here. Make sure that if you got a problem, that it really is a problem. And then approach it just like any problem-solving thing. And you know, we've talked about this on previous shows too. When you're facing a problem, you want to explore it. Talk about deductive reasoning here. You know, deductive reasoning: if the premises are true, the conclusion is guaranteed to be true. So you tear your problem apart. What are the premises of this problem? What are the facts of the problem? You know, what is causing it? And if you can change those premises, if you look for a solution in changing one of the premises, then you change the conclusion. So that's just a little problem-solving tip right there. Plus, ask yourself questions like, is this really a problem? What's the worst that would happen if I do nothing? What would be the worst thing I could do to solve this problem? What would be the absolute wrong thing to do to solve this problem? If there were no... nothing stopping me, what would I do ideally to solve this problem if there were nothing holding me back? And then do, you know, that's pretty much doing a 180 on it. you know, paradoxing it, going the absolute opposite direction that you should, just to explore, to come up with potential solutions. It's kind of part of the creative process here. And then there's another part, another tidbit, which is honestly profound. Sometimes the solution you're looking for lies outside of your belief system. And that's another thing you got to look at. You know, if you can't find a solution to your problem, you got to expand your belief system. You got to really rethink your core values, your beliefs, really. I mean, and I'll give you my quick example, which we've talked about previously, but you know, if you are in a religion that forbids divorcing and you're married to a toxic alcoholic, and you know, you find no solution because you can't live with them and you can't get out of it because of the constraints of a belief system. Well, sometimes a solution lies outside of that belief system, and that means expanding it, rethinking it, reengineering it, so that you can find the solutions that you need.
You know, I might just also inject, Doug, that we have to keep perspective when we are dealing with a problem. Keep in mind that there's a lot of good things going on in life as well. Then you can address the problem as a singular problem and not like it's the end of the world.
Exactly. You got to keep it in perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it really sucks when all aspects of your life are falling apart, but, you know.
Yeah, but and there's
more. Then I call that transformation, ultimate transformation, that there's something inside the self that has to change so that all aspects of the outer life can take on a new color. But, you know, it's just keeping in perspective. I think what happens to all of us is that, because we've all done it, is that we're addressing a problem, we're so focused on the problem, we're thinking of it in familiar ways, and we have to step back. Sometimes it's good just to go away for a few minutes or a day and come back, and, you know, that is if you don't have to make a spur-of-the-moment decision. But even then, it's good to say, you know what, I need to take a breath here. I need to just push the pause button. I love that pause button visual. Mm-hmm. And think about it before rethinking the problem, because then there's very often something that you've not seen before. And you talk about giving up a belief system. I also say it might mean that you have to give up something that you held value to that no longer has value in your life, because you have to trade it off or trade it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we become very comfortable with all these comforts in our life. And, to get something more over here, I have to, you know, give up this. Like, you can't have two new couches. It's simple.
Cake and eat it too, huh?
You know, you want a new couch, but what do you do with the old one? You know, and then you say, well, maybe I'll build a cottage at the lake. It's hoarding. You know, we end up hoarding things that we can't see, that we have to be in a constant state of change, in a constant state of flowing. Problems then don't seem big, although we can have big moments. At least certainly they feel that way.
Let's go back to something you said a moment ago about, you know, if we find ourselves when life is falling apart and we have one problem after another. There's something interesting about that, too. I know we've all been there. It seems like just one thing popping up after another, a series, you know, everything goes in cycles. Well, think about that for a moment. Our life, and I'm talking to the audience now, if you just pause for a moment and take a quick view, a quick assessment of your life, where you are right here, right now, this very moment, the circumstances you're in, your financial situation, all of it, just take a quick snapshot of your life right now, this moment. That is really the summation of the choices that you've made in life up to this point. It's true for all of us. And if there's something about your life that you don't like or that you want to change, that's fine. You can change that, and you do that by making different choices. And those choices that we all make are based on our belief system, so you have to reassess your beliefs. Here's another real big point, though, that I want to make in connection with this. The universe is an interesting thing because we get opportunities to learn lessons in life. And I love... The the comment written by James Allen in the book As a Man Thinketh, that when you learn a spiritual lesson contained in a circumstance, it will pass. And then we move on to learn other lessons. So if you're in a circumstance you don't like, if you learn the spiritual lesson contained in it, then it will pass. It will pass. You know, it doesn't mean it will instantly go away necessarily, but if we learn that lesson, we change. Because that's what happened. We can know a lesson and not have learned it. When we learn a lesson, we change. That means we make different decisions. We make different choices. And the universe is interesting because the universe will give us opportunities to learn those lessons. In fact, here's a perfect example. People who go from one bad relationship to another, we call it external replication, go from one bad relationship to another. Well, the universe is giving this person an opportunity to learn some lessons, primarily personal growth, becoming healthy. Because when we become healthy within, we're no longer attracted to those poor relationship types. So the universe will give us these opportunities to learn a lesson. And it almost says, you're going to learn this lesson or you're going to die. I mean, that's almost the message there. So we have a choice of either learning the lessons and growing or continuing in that misery. And so if you go from one bad thing to another and it's like it always keeps coming up, you got to learn the spiritual lesson. Look for the spiritual lesson. That means you need to take another look at your beliefs. Why are you in this, relationship, for example? Why are you in this circumstance? What choices did you make that brought you here? And then we're talking really about the first universal law of responsibility, that you are where you are because of the choices that you've made. And we can look back and say, I didn't intend it to be this way. Well, the universe is not like that. It doesn't discriminate. If you make a choice, it gives you exactly what you chose. You know, people say life's not fair, and I think there are times that could be true, but the vast majority of circumstances, life is very fair. It gives you exactly what you put into it. It gives you exactly what you ask for. But we're not specific enough. Vicki, you and I were talking earlier today about the same thing, where we were talking about a time when one of us said, hey, we want X number of dollars in our bank account.
Yeah, I love that story. Yeah.
And sure enough, it came to pass. But it was only in there momentarily because we had to turn around and pay it out to other people, right? So the universe gave you exactly what you asked for. And same with me. But we weren't specific enough. We weren't, we didn't give it enough direction. We didn't paint a better story or paint a better picture for it. We weren't really specific with what we were wanting out of the deal.
You know, though, I think that the whole point of self-awareness, Doug, is to know our own thoughts. Because how many times do we hear this? That's not what I meant to say. Well, then push the pause button. What do you mean to say? And that's why we paraphrase so much, because we're all confused. We don't know what each other's talking about, let alone ourselves. But this is the whole experiment where you put it out there and say, how were my thoughts and my words connected? Did I miss some words? Did I miss some thoughts? And it is an experiment. There's no question about it. I mean, it's an observation of getting to know the self, getting to know the language we have in our heads and how it is that we process our thinking. But not just our thinking, but how we feel about it. Because I can feel one way, think another, and say something entirely different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to line that up, and that's the point of evolution. That's the point of, self-awareness, self-conscious, to be self-complete.
Mm-hmm.
And this never ends. I mean, just because you think you've achieved a certain level of self-complete doesn't mean that, it's like I got to black belt, but I didn't know there was 7 more belts if I live that long enough. I mean, it's the way it goes. So it's an evolution of learning.
So good point. So just to kind of sum up where we've been so far is if you're going from one crisis to another, you got to look at your belief system. You got to figure out why. Why am I in this circumstance? So why does it keep repeating? Well, the answer is because you're not learning the lesson that's contained in it. What's that lesson? you figure it out. It's unique for each one of us, so we got to figure it out, make better choices. And don't forget that the universe will continue to present opportunities for you to learn this lesson. It's just going to keep happening until you learn it. And so you've got to make better choices. And we talked about the first universal law of personal responsibility, that you are where you are because of the choices you have made. You don't want to make a choice. Well, of course, that is a choice in itself. But if you don't want to make proactive choices in your life, well, somebody else will make those choices for you. So you take charge of your choices and make good choices and learn those lessons.
You know, if I can say this is a macrocosm and a microcosm, Doug, you know, if we want to look at the globe and the state of the world and the state of countries and the state of everything, it's because we allowed it to happen. And it's not just about those guys. It's like when we were busy doing something else, they were doing that. It's kind of like being in your house, you're off in the kitchen, and somebody sneaks into your living room and runs off with the TV. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, things go on all the time. The point is, we can't know everything, but we're supposed to have each other's backs. Mm-hmm. You know, we're supposed to be a community of people working for a common good. And if we did more of that and we stayed a little more awake, we wouldn't be in this mess. That right. being said, we have created the mess so that we can find opportunities to problem solve. There isn't one problem on this planet that isn't easily solvable. And the first is to take responsibility.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the second universal law of personal responsibility, and that is basically, if it's your stuff, take care of it. Don't expect other people to do your stuff. And this is another big one, too, and this is where a lot of folks just haven't learned this particular lesson here. You hear things like, well, that's too hard, or I don't know how to do that, or I'm not smart enough, or I'm not edumacated enough, or whatever the excuse is. And my response to that is, how hard can it be? I mean, people just like you and me put men on the moon, unless we didn't, and it's all conspiracy. I'm just kidding. You know, the fact is that you have to have that can-do attitude. How hard can it be? Honestly, really? You don't know how to do it? Well, you know, here's a brilliant flash of brilliance. That's redundant, too. Here's a flash of brilliance for you. If you know how to do something, it's usually simple. So learn how to do it. If you don't have the answer, go find the answer. And I tell my coaching counseling clients this quite often. I don't want to hear all the reasons why you can't do it. I want to hear all the reasons why you can do it. Don't tell me you can't. I don't want to hear it. You're talking to somebody that doesn't know the word can't. And I've demonstrated that my whole life. I was just enthused and mesmerized with life. I wanted to do this, and I wanted to do that, and I wanted to do this and that. And so I did. And I was always inspired by Da Vinci. You know, he did this, he did that, and he was good at it. I mean, he was obviously gifted. But, you know, how hard can it be? Go make it happen. Don't want to hear why you can't make it happen. I want to hear why you can. And this also spills over into other things. You know, the whole asking questions. This is good stuff for managers, too. I mean, how many employees come up and ask a question that they ought to know the answer to? And every time a manager answers that employee, they're becoming an enabler, essentially. And so when it comes to that kind of thing, good management, and this is really spilling over to leadership, if they come to you with a question that they ought to know the answer to, or that they could easily find the answer to, you need to redirect them to that. Where would you find this answer if I wasn't here today? Well, I'd go look it up. Well, then why don't you do that? Because you need to know it anyway, and it will just, you know, burn it into your memory better. So go take care of that.
Unless there's a really long lineup of customers.
Of course. There's always exceptions to the rule. You know, always. But in general stuff, encourage people to do it for themselves. You know, I love getting the emails that essentially ask, do you do metaphysics degrees? And it's plastered all over the website, you know? And I want to say, no, we don't, sorry. Because they're not looking. And yet that's the first lesson. In fact, a lot of students, when they enroll, they get a first lesson because of those kind of thing. And it's not that they mean any ill will or anything, but they haven't learned to figure it out. And this is a beautiful thing that everybody ought to be doing. Look first, ask second. You know,
I have a beautiful story for that, Doug. I was a young girl. When I was in my very early 20s, I had met my hypnosis teacher, although I didn't know that then. I had met he and his wife, and a few of us had been invited to their house after a Toastmasters meeting, and I was trying to make conversation. I thought I was being brilliant, and I said, so what kind of, you know, things interest you, like what kind of books do you like? And he sat there across the room, looked at me, and of course locked eyes, and he said, why don't you look around? And of course, I wanted to crawl under the couch, but I looked at they were wall-to-wall bookcases. It was just the dumbest question I could have asked. But, you know, the first rule is observation.
Right.
You know, I mean, and the first rule is, I mean, if I'd have been thinking, and of course, I'm young and naive, and I didn't know any better, but that's really no excuse, because it doesn't matter what age you are, we all do this kind of dumb thing.
Oh, we do.
It's like I could have looked over the bookcases and say, oh, I see you're really interested in blah, blah, blah. Do you see? It's like, oh, do you like books?
It's funny.
Dumb.
Well, and I also want to do a little disclaimer here, too, for any of my students that are listening to this. This does not mean you cannot ask me questions. All I ask is that you look, try to find the answer for yourself. But if you can't, then you email me and you ask. That's cool. Just make the effort. That's all I'm trying to get at. But that's part of that second universal law of personal responsibility, which is if it's your stuff, do it. You know, don't expect other people to do your stuff.
May I also inject here, because we were talking about how this is so good for kids. Mm-hmm. I really do preach the philosophy that if the brains and the body are capable, they ought to.
Mm-hmm.
And some people thought I was a really tough mom, because although I would oversee it, my kids would make their own lunches for school. They participated in the meals, and they all did their own laundry by the time they're 12.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like I'm a hands-off mom. It's just that's how I believed.
Well,
was
training.
It's like, do it yourself. You're quite capable. All of them are very independent and sometimes too independent. Sometimes I think I created monsters is what I did. But trying to encourage other parents to do the same, not only does this encourage children to become more self-responsible, it also encourages thinking. And that's, you know, right back to the very beginning of this program, we're talking about that critical thinking, that deductive reasoning, it's to be a thinker. And we think and do simultaneously. So we're becoming self-responsible on so many levels when you encourage it at as young an age as possible.
Good points. And I concur with that. You know, it's part of teaching children to be able to grow up and stand on their own two feet. You know, without being dependent in an unhealthy way on mom and dad or anyone else for that matter. Speaking of that, let's talk about the third universal law of personal responsibility, which essentially is don't do things for other people that they could and should do for themselves. So the first law is we're where we're at because of our choices we've made. Second law is don't expect other people to do stuff that you ought to be doing for yourself. Third law is don't do things for other people that they could and should do for themselves. And that's really the definition of codependence. I mean, codependent people are very, very strong people, capable people. And, you know, they're so used to carrying the problems of the world on their shoulders, and they fix it and they make it work and all that. And yet they end up doing things for other people they could and should do for themselves. Now, I'm not saying you can't do a nice here. It's not what I mean. You could certainly do a nice. And if somebody needs a helping hand, and by helping you're not enabling them in an unhealthy pattern, then fine, go for it. But be careful of enabling people in unhealthy patterns. It's kind of like the example of an employee asking a question that they ought to know the answer to, or they could easily find the answer to. If you tell them, then you're doing something for them that they could and should do for themselves. And essentially what you're doing is you are assuming responsibility for that person. So let's just clarify this. When we do things for other people that they could and should do for themselves, we are assuming responsibility for that person. And I'm talking about adults here. We have no right to assume responsibility for another adult. And by assuming responsibility for them, we are denying them their right to personal responsibility and to being responsible for themselves. And we're also denying them their right to personal growth. And sometimes that personal growth involves some painful lessons, you know, but it's theirs to learn. We're all on our journey, on our path, right? We all have the unique stuff that happens to us for our learning benefit. And some of those lessons are painful. And yet we cannot deny another person the right to learn those lessons regardless of the pain involved.
You know, I can add in here too, Doug, when we're talking about problem solving, what you have just described is part of a formula we can all use very, very well to determine what really is our own problem. Because sometimes we are very occupied with other people and how they fit into dynamics, how they fit into, you know, the scheme of our thinking, and a problem that may not be our problem at all.
Good point.
So if we're thinking about, geez, I've got a family dynamic here, and, you know, we're going to call a family meeting. Well, hold it. These are individuals. Are you doing something for somebody that they ought to be doing for themselves? And maybe it's none of your business.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so I think it's a good formula to check in with ourselves with regards to problem solving.
And that's a good point, too. Make sure that somebody else is not making their problems your problems, and you end up trying to solve these problems, and they may have even masterfully manipulated it. So, good point to keep in mind. So, we've talked about these three universal laws of personal responsibility. We understand that if we make better decisions, better choices, we're going to have better circumstances. We're going to have better situations. We're not going to have as many problems. If we take care of that which we ought to take care of and not expect other people to do it, we're not going to be an unnecessary burden on other people. And if we don't do things for other people they could and should do for themselves, we're not going to have a burden on ourselves anyway, but we're not going to be denying them their right to learning and doing for themselves. And so if we do this on an individual basis, at an individual level, and if everybody did this, what kind of shape do you think the world would be in? I mean, think about that for a minute.
I'm coming to that planet, Doug.
Yeah. Well, you're on it, just the wrong time. You know, we're not there yet. But if you think about just applying these three universal laws of personal responsibility to everything we do, if I apply these universal laws of responsibility, I'm not going to smite you because you have a different religion than me. You know, I'm going to take responsibility for me, but I'm going to allow you the free will to believe as you wish. If I take responsibility for my area, for my sphere of influence, for whatever, and I keep it tidy and clean, whatever that may be, if we all did that, it would all overlap. You know, the planet does better. The world does better. If we just apply these rules of responsibility, the whole world benefits. And that's where it's got to start. You know, it starts with us as individuals, and it spreads out from there.
And changing our belief systems.
Yeah.
It's simple.
It all comes down to your belief system. You know, belief is the most powerful, potent force in the universe. It's responsible for everything. It's responsible for the wars. It's responsible for peace. It's responsible for our successes in our lives, our failures. It boils all down to belief. What, you know, your reality is your belief. Your belief is your reality. That's just, it may not be the real, but it's your reality. And it's just as real to you. So
You know, the whole philosophy behind MCHS and IMHS is to believe in yourself. It does not mean in any way that we negate the part that we're all in this human community together. But if every individual began to think responsibly, take responsibility, and do their part, just as we've been discussing throughout the show, then we would know how to better serve each other and serve in a way that supports growth, that supports healthy thinking. And I think the first recognition is to determine where we do not support healthy thinking and individuality and the right to be free as an individual. So exactly what, you know, you've been talking about earlier, Doug, about, you know, everything from what we ought to do for ourselves and what others ought to do for themselves, and create that bit of space between each other. And in that, then we can begin to negotiate from a more healthy point of view and problem solve together. So it's not just me determining, you know, how do I solve my own problems, but how can I access other, you know, people or other assistance in a good way that supports the decisions that I'm making, and then how can I better serve the community and other people? So it's in no way dysfunctional. If anything, it's functional in a very healthy approach of self-responsibility and community responsibility.
And isn't that a beautiful thing? When we take responsibility for ourselves and our lives, we end up contributing to the solutions for humanity. You know, we're contributing to the solution, not being part of the problem.
I have a pet peeve about people having opinions of other things when, yeah, I have a lot of pet peeves, actually. But,
isn't that an opinion?
Yeah. Having opinions of other things that they're not educated about, and they are not a living example of us being self-responsible. You cannot teach something that you don't know, although you may well be learning it. And it's fair to be honest to say, I'm learning about this also, I'll share what I know. But don't have judgments, you know, opinions that turn into judgments of others when we're not living examples of that.
Well, yeah, we call them naysayers and pot stirrers and
basically
deflectors. You know, they're trying to deflect the attention off themselves, and they're trying to deflect their own attention off themselves of what they need to work on. So, you know, it's all about taking responsibility for where you are right here, right now. You know, and I love this is something I include in the course material in the degree program. It's an experience I had some years ago, quite a few years ago now. I was in St. Louis, and I was there for some training and for the company I worked for, and we were in a room, you know, just a kind of a classroom type. Everybody had their desk and their little cubicle type thing, and I had a hutch and a phone. And so one day I'm there on the phone, standing up, and I'm kind of leaning my elbow in on this hutch and just talking to a client. And I happen to notice there's this little magnetic mirror stuck on the inside of this hutch. You wouldn't have been able to see it otherwise. It was kind of on the end, inside, and hidden a little bit. But because of the way I was kind of leaning on the hutch, I could see it. And I pulled it off. It was a specialty item, those things you print your company name on and you'd give away. And it was a mirror, and it had a magnetic backing. And on the face of this mirror was some words I'll never forget. It read, "You are looking at the person responsible for your future." And I was always impressed by that. And I thought, wow, that is great. It's so true. And so when you look at the mirror, look in the mirror, think about it. You are looking at the person responsible for your future. In fact, those words were so good, I just printed them on a little slip of paper. And I pasted that paper to the mirrors in our bathroom. The boys read it every day, even subconsciously growing up. And it really worked. They take responsibility. But if we look at it that way, when we look in the mirror, we are looking at the person responsible for our future. And think about it. Today was the future that you had yesterday. So if you want a better today, you better make better decisions yesterday. So tomorrow is your future too. If you want a better future tomorrow, you make better decisions today. And if you don't want to make a decision or a choice, fine, one will be made for you by default. And so take control over that and make better decisions.
You know, Dan has a question in the chat, Doug. Now, I'd really like to tackle this, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
He says, what are your thoughts on AA, which I'm assuming he means Alcoholic Anonymous group? Don't you think, he said, individuals should believe in themselves and not this higher power? You know, Dan, I'm going to say I think AA is a wonderful organization, and I think everyone has their own steps, their own journey, and their own part along the way, so to speak. And if that is a step for people, that they would stop drinking and that they would find comfort in dialogue with other people, then that's what they ought to do. We don't pass judgment on that. At another level, I want to say that I would hope it's a step that people outgrow.
Well put. You're very kind.
And that once there is enough time, generally 6 months of sobriety, and then from that 6 months, the next tremendous stage is that first 12 months. Once that's happened, where, you know, it's okay, you're growing and you're changing and you're evolving, that you might look around and say, okay, I'm really tired of commiserating now. I really need to make some progress.
Yeah.
And that somebody might then, you know, take the step out of the group and onto other areas of study that further that self-completeness. That includes self-responsibility. I can't knock something that works for some people that makes an improvement in their life.
And it does for some people. However, the success rate for AA has been, in some reports, calculated at 5%. It's not what you think. And again, like you, I have some strong opinions on it. But then again, I'm not an alcoholic. And so whatever flips your switch and whatever works for you, but this whole dependent on this higher power thing, yes, it is essentially trading one dependent relationship for another one. And that's my view on God anyway. If you depend on God, and you switch it from alcohol to God, you're now switching one dependent relationship for another one.
But it is trading up. It's trading up.
Perhaps. And hopefully that higher power will become their higher self.
Totally. I totally agree with that. So, I mean, it's everybody has their journey, and hopefully learning to problem solve, as we've been talking tonight's program. And, you know, if I can just interrupt again, Doug, happy birthday. I hope you had a wonderful day, and I hope you have a wonderful year ahead. And thank you for providing all of us here at IMHS and MCHS with this wonderful venue to share.
Well, thank you for being part of it. And that goes out to all my students and everybody connected. It's been great, you know, meeting everybody and getting to know people, and it continues. And that's a good thing. And, you know, it's not just me alone either, Vicki. I mean, you've been part of this for a while now. So, I mean, it takes the, you know, the efforts of a lot of folks, too. And I really appreciate that.
It takes one to start and a whole group to follow, and we are making progress, and I believe that we make impact in our community at large, so I'm glad to be a part of it. We'll be back next week.
Yeah, anyway, but we appreciate everybody taking their time out tonight to listen to this live program, or taking the time out to listen to the archive. Either way, you're taking your time, and hope you benefit from the information that we talk about. I know that perhaps some of the weeks the topics are not, you know, earth-shattering and fascinating, like when we talk about the mysterious stuff and psychic stuff, but this stuff needs to be said, it needs to be taught, and it needs to be applied. So continue to listen, tell other people about it, give them a heads up, because you'll be contributing to their education as well, and hopefully they'll benefit too. I'd also like to quickly recommend that you take a look at oneplanetaccord.org for a cool flag. That's it. Take care, everyone. Have a great week. Good night.
Good night.